I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's Tuesday, the 26th of November. I'm Jules Breach. He's Andy Brassel. This is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
No, it's not under pressure. It's demands. I have a big demands because my responsibility is big. And now it's a job for my job is to find solution.
Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be discussing the Premier League managers who are under a little bit of pressure, whether Manchester City are still in this title race, and we'll also chat about the European hopes of North London's finest. Andy, lots to talk about, but first of all, how was your weekend?
Pretty good. I'm recovering from a small bout of the giggles during your intro. But I'm fine apart from that. Yeah, it was good. Of course, we had the Copa Libertadores on the BBC, which was pretty nice. I was delighted to see Jorge Jesus win that.
I didn't get a chance to watch that. Tell me what happened.
Oh, well, it was great because Football Ramble's very own Jonathan Wilson was on there next to Gilberto Silva, which was fantastic. It was kind of like... If I can describe it to you, I suppose I would describe it to you like Manchester United winning the Champions League in 1999, in that Flamengo play great football, best team in the competition. In the final, it's just not happening for them. They're losing 1-0. They deserve to be losing 1-0. River Plate are going to win it. And then Gabriel Barbosa, or Gabby Goal as he calls himself, I think very much like Paul Ince, he likes to promote his own nickname. Anyway, he scored 2 in the 89th and I guess the 93rd minute. Got himself sent off in the 95th, but obviously still came out to help lift up the trophy. And it was fantastic. We got the projector out at home.
Did you?
To get it on the wall.
It's a special occasion then.
Yeah, it really was. The thing you forget, though, when you've got small children is it starts with shadow puppets and then they want to be in it. They're trying to get in it, which is quite annoying.
Well, do you know, I didn't have the chance to watch that game. I was actually in the pub, so it was on in the background.
Yeah.
But I didn't really pay much attention to it because I was 3 red wines in by that point.
Yeah.
But on Sunday, I spent the hot... I had a really proper lazy Sunday. I did absolutely nothing.
You had the full multi-screen business going on, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It was quite difficult to actually concentrate on. But obviously, I, if you haven't seen the photo, I was watching 3 football matches at the same time. And it's a blessing that we've got the FA Player this year where every single live WSL game is shown. And then BT Sport had the Chelsea game on as well. So I had BT Sport on my TV and then I had my iPad and my laptop with 2 other games on the FA Player on at the same time. So
which
great.
Which WSL game were you watching?
So there was on the telly, it was Chelsea against Birmingham. Then on the FA Player, I was watching West Ham Reading and then Arsenal's game as well. So
Chelsea, it was Chelsea Birmingham, wasn't it? It was at Birmingham, wasn't it? Where Beth England scored that amazing goal from the Millie Bright pass.
Yeah.
I mean, that was proper, like, remember what Dante used to do for Bayern Munich, where he used to search out Mario Mandzukic and just do one of those massive, long 70-yard passes. It really reminded me of that, actually.
Yeah, Millie was amazing in that game as well. I mean, when you see a centre-half getting into the box and scoring goals, it's exactly what you want to see. Although Emma Hayes was fuming after the game and said that she thought it was a really poor performance from the girls, despite the fact they absolutely battered Birmingham. But there you go. But yeah, so that's what I did with my Sunday. I watched three games at the same time. That all ended, and then I watched Sheffield United against Man United as well. So it was a full day of just sitting on the sofa doing absolutely sod all, but eating and watching football.
Well, that sounds great. But I have to say, the weird thing about Sunday, I mean, it doesn't really happen that often anymore that you have only one Premier League game. And of course, it was an excellent Premier League game, as I was discussing on the Ramble yesterday. But for quite a lot of that day, with there being so little Premier League, of course, I was watching loads of European games, you feel that there's got to be something to fill the vacuum, like perhaps a little manager sacking, for example. Mm. And there are so many on the brink at the moment. I don't know about you, I feel very tense entering a podcast studio at the moment because I'm thinking, while we're in here,
anything could happen.
What's happening out there? Because you think of the people who are looking over their shoulders at the moment. I mean, the most obvious ones, I suppose, will be Unai Emery, Manuel Pellegrini, Marco Silva, even Kike Sanchez Flores.
Yeah, well, this is a really interesting one, because when we were talking about this before we came into the studio, we were saying, you know, there are quite a few Premier League managers under pressure. And when you mentioned Kike Sanchez Flores, I thought, is he? Because he's only recently just taken the job at Watford. But then you pointed out this,
I think the key word there is Watford, isn't it?
It is. They're bottom of the table. This article in the Times kind of points it out. And it's not a very big piece written by Ian Winrow, but he does make some good points. And what he's suggesting is, you know, he's been there and he's only won one of the nine games since he took over from Javi Gracia. And we're obviously expecting a bit more of a turnaround from Watford, because when you look at where they are in the table, they're a better team than that, aren't they? And they shouldn't really be at the bottom of the table. And we're expecting there to be a bit of a change since Flores took over. And it has improved. I do think it has improved. You know, they've got a few points since he took over. It is just the one win, but they've picked up a few draws in there, and the performances have definitely improved, particularly with clean sheets. And they've got Troy Deeney coming back now, and he's going to make a massive difference once he's fully fit and starting games as well. I was surprised to see that this article was written, that the headline of it is "The next game could decide the fate of Kike Sanchez Flores," and that's against Southampton next weekend. Do you really think that if they lose that, he could get the sack?
Yep. Definitely. I mean, it's Watford. And, you know, if you think about it, in the whole time that they've been in the Premier League, this time, it's not been about stability in the coach's position. The stability has been elsewhere in the club. And I think that's the thing. They've never been really realistically close to the prospect of relegation, have they, before? But here, they look in proper trouble. I think the interesting thing you were saying about Troy Deeney there, I mean, you know, we talked about how Javi Gracia was unlucky in certain ways. I mean, imagine two coaches get sacked without having the chance to call on Troy Deeney. That would be really unfortunate. Yeah. But it would also be very Watford. I mean, their model is generally a pretty prudent one. But, you know, they haven't hesitated in firing coaches before. And it's always kind of worked for them, really. You know, you look at them, you don't think of them as a basket case club. Okay, they're a club that do things very differently to any other Premier League or, for that matter, Championship club. But they're quite happy to turn over and turn over and turn over, aren't they? And to me, it always seemed a little curious about Kike Sanchez Flores going back there.
Mm. I think when your home form is poor, that's really telling of kind of where you are at as a club. And it's now 11 consecutive games at home and Watford haven't won. It's the first time that's ever happened in their history. And that's really bad. And I think that the strange thing is when a new manager comes in, and we've just seen it with Mourinho at Tottenham, and we're going to talk more about that later, but you'd expect there to be this new manager bounce, don't you? And Watford haven't really had that, despite the fact, as I mentioned already, they've picked up a few points. They've got a couple of draws. They've got one win under Flores, but they've just not really had that uplift that you expect when a new manager comes in.
I guess the question has to be, did he need kind of Champions League form to get them in a decent position, given that where he started with? Because I would agree with you, there have been promising signs, but maybe promise isn't enough where they are. I mean, I saw them at Tottenham last month and they were really good for a lot of that. They deserved to win the game. And yet they couldn't close it out, despite the fact that Spurs were having an absolutely terrible day. And that is the sort of thing that concerns you. Like individual results, like getting absolutely belted at Manchester City, as long as that doesn't have any lingering effects on confidence, it's one of those things that doesn't really mean anything. They're almost playing in a different league to Manchester City. They're not aiming at the same sort of things during the season. So that's not really the big deal. But the fact that the only team they've beaten so far is Norwich is an issue. What I would say is concerning, if you go back to that game against Burnley at the weekend, I think for the first like 50, 60 minutes of that, they were excellent. They were the better team. But I think when you play well and you're still not getting points out of a game, I mean, does that point to lack of confidence? Once the first goal goes in, does it all go? I think it's difficult, you have to say, going 1-0 down to Burnley as well, because they're organised, and once they had a proper foothold in the game, they found it easier to manage the game from there. But I think you could understand at the end of that, the coach going, whether it be Kike Sanchez-Flores, as in this case, or anyone else, if you send your team out there, and there's no sense, I don't think, of deserted him or anything like that, but when you send your team out there and they do play well for an hour, and then you end up getting beaten 3-0, there must be a part of you that thinks, where do we go from here?
Yeah, and I think you're right there, because this has happened to Watford since Flores has taken over, where they've had quite large, good spells in games where if they'd taken chances, you could potentially have seen a different result. And just like that on Saturday, I think if Deulofeu took his chance, it could have been a very different game in that first half, because they were by far the better team in the first 45 minutes.
I mean, does this just mean, Jules, that it's all down to Troy Deeney not being there? Or did they need more cover? Have those coaches been let down by the transfer business that's been done or hadn't done? And I guess I'm thinking, have they made a mistake in signing Danny Welbeck? Because we know Danny Welbeck, depending on how much of your budget that takes up, we know he's a class player. We know he's a player probably for a bigger and better team than Watford, if it's not for the fitness issues. But you can't separate the fitness issues from the reality, as Ben Golliver of the Washington Post always says. The greatest ability is availability, isn't it?
Mm.
And he's not.
And the thing is with Troy Deeney and you saying that, you know, is it down to Troy Deeney being out that's Watford's biggest problem? When your team are relying that much on one player, and I know he's the captain, I know he's the leader, and I know he brings a lot to that dressing room and when he's on the pitch as well. But if your team are relying that much on one player and it can cause that much of a difference when they're out, that's not a good place to be. And I think it's a fairly similar story to what we're seeing at West Ham at the moment. And I don't know whether it is too simplistic to say Troy Deeney is the reason why Watford are where they are, and Fabianski being injured for West Ham is why West Ham are where they are. It's too simplistic to say that, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I guess we're like a detective duo, aren't we, really?
We're trying our best.
A bit, because I suppose, like, if it was a cop show, we'd be saying the simplest solution is probably the right one. And I think there's something in that. I think you could make an argument that if Sebastian Haller, for example, was at Watford, they'd be 12th. I think you could make that argument. And it's a dangerous place to be in, to be relying on Troy Deeney. One, because, yeah, you can't just rely on one player. And two, because he went through a massive dry spell last season. So that is the point, really, at which you've got to be looking at it and addressing it and saying, well, look, maybe we are relying too much on this guy. Let's kind of future-proof ourselves. And that's really what they've failed to do. Now, going back to West Ham and Pellegrini, they've got an issue because all the focus really does fall on the coach there, I think. More so than at Watford, simply because he's had an opportunity to have a lot of input into the composition of the squad. Of course, the sporting director at the start of the season, who he knew pretty well from Malaga. and yet they still have quite an unbalanced squad. There's a lot of talent in there, but you just feel they're not providing anything for Alert. I feel very sorry for him. I think he's been cut off. He's been isolated. And I know on Match of the Day, they were analysing it on Saturday after they played Spurs, of course, and it was their league game because of the return of Mourinho. And there was a lot of criticism of Alert. But I don't think that's entirely fair. I think if the ball doesn't come, you do eventually stop making the runs.
Yeah, I think that from what I was seeing of what West Ham fans were sort of saying about the game on Saturday when I was in the studio, and obviously, you know, the game had just finished. We were then talking about the other matches that kicked off at 3 o'clock, but I was keeping an eye on what tweets were coming in for the matches. And the West Ham fans that had been in touch were all saying that, you know, they are blaming the goalkeeper, and there were a couple of, you know, he was terrible again, Roberto, wasn't he, for West Ham, and didn't have a good game. And Alaire didn't have the service. And that's something that West Ham fans are seeing. And they can see that there's something not quite right and that it's not gelling together. And whose fault is that? And a lot of them are pointing the finger at Pellegrini, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's not entirely unreasonable. You know, there are some big holes in that team, despite the fact that there's an enormous amount of talent. And I do believe that Alaire and Pablo Fornals, who is a really good player, I'm not sure if he was necessarily the priority for them when you consider that they've got players like Yarmolenko, Lanzini. Clearly there were injuries, but there were so many other creative players. That's not really what they needed in midfield. But I do believe that the Fornals and Alaire will settle at some point. But when you're looking at a team that clearly has an issue with confidence at the moment, it's something that clearly spreads through the whole team. But it was funny. You were saying to me earlier, Jules, that it is a case of expectation, isn't it, to a certain degree? Because it's since everyone started talking about Europe that it seems to have fallen apart a little bit.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if we look back to, say, the first couple weeks of the season, I remember we had someone tweet us or write in and say, you know, who do you guys think could break into the top six this season? And I remember saying that West Ham, on paper, have an excellent team. And
that's very honest of you.
And I think that they could break into the top six. And another team that I thought could do that were Everton. And, you know, it's those two teams when the expectations were so high, because at the first few weeks of the season, when we were seeing the likes of Arsenal and Tottenham and Manchester United not performing at their best, and then it looked as though the door was slightly open for a different team to break into the traditional top six this season, the most likely candidates looked like they were going to be West Ham, Everton, and obviously Leicester, who are absolutely flying. So yeah, and I feel like ever since then, both teams have just dramatically slipped away. And you look at the table now, West Ham are only 3 points above the relegation zone, and Everton only have one more point than West Ham. And Marco Silva is a manager under serious pressure right now. And just before I left the house to come in to the Ramble studio, I did see that Everton were in talks to potentially replace the manager, was the headline on Sky Sports News. So when you see something like that, and, you know, at the time of recording, all these managers do still have their jobs, but
yes,
I have no idea what to expect over the next 24 hours and over the next week, come the weekend, who, you know, could potentially lose their job. And I do think it's a shame, because we want to see managers given time to work with a squad and work with a team. And there's nothing nicer than seeing a manager turn things around from when something's not going very well. It's a really nice thing to be able to see and see that change and see a group of players come together and start working as a team again. You know, that's what we want to see. I love seeing winning in football, and it's not nice when you know, you see managers that are under a lot of pressure and they're getting stick from the fans. So I hope that they do manage to turn things around. But we know how football works. It's not going to happen for all of them, is it?
No, it's not. And I do feel with Everton, it's just the Norwich result is a problem in and of itself. Like I said, we talked about them a while back, and I don't think they've been too bad in recent weeks. They've played some decent stuff. They've never looked like they've deserted Marco Silva, pretty much like Kike Sanchez Flores. But a lot of people, the minute I asked if anyone had questions or if they'd like to address to us on Twitter. First load of them were about Everton. Matt Spencer, what do you see happening to Everton for the rest of the season? Jim Stanley, will they be going down? Joe Bird's got involved as well. So, you know, there really is anticipation of something happening. And just when you hear the boos sort of drowning out the cheers after a goal, which we did at Goodison, after that second Norwich goal, you know that it's approaching some sort of tipping point, don't you?
Yeah, and it was exactly the same thing at the Emirates as well for Arsenal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
God, those boos at the full-time whistle were louder than any of the cheers for either of the goals that they scored. That says a lot.
It also, that is one of the most curious post-goal moments that I've seen in a while.
Lacazette.
Yeah, where I guess because he scored, he thought it wasn't something to celebrate and there clearly wasn't time to get the ball out of the net, come back and chase a winner.
Yeah.
So he kind of thought, what am I going to do? Pull my socks up? Maybe?
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? And just it was a strange moment because as soon as the board went up and it said 7 minutes of extra time, you just thought, Arsenal are going to get something out of this now and they don't deserve it because they didn't. I thought Southampton thoroughly deserved to get the win and somehow Arsenal managed to get something out of that game. And even the Arsenal fans will say we didn't deserve it. The Arsenal fans that were there said they didn't deserve anything out of that game. And I know that, you know, Arsenal fans tend to be quite negative. And there seems to be this horrible thing right now where there's certain fans that are almost hoping that Arsenal lose so that Unai Emery gets the sack. I can't get my head around fans wanting their own team to lose so that a decision like that is made. That just seems utterly crazy to me.
But when you know it's going to be for the long-term benefit of the club, that's different, isn't it? Because you're thinking, is one little win against Southampton really going to change anything? We've had Arsenal fans in touch as well. Mike from Victoria in Canada has got in touch. Thanks, Mike. Says, if I could fire a manager, it would be Emery. His tactical ineptitude shows up when Arsenal fall behind. And he doesn't know how to motivate players, but unknown why Raul Sanyehi, of course, is keeping him around.
Mm. We had absolute Arsenal legend Tony Adams in the BT Sports studio with us, and he was actually watching the Arsenal-Southampton game. And you know what Tony's like, he's absolutely hilarious and will always be completely and utterly honest about Arsenal. He just bleeds Arsenal, doesn't he? And obviously he was wearing one of his character suits, as always. He was wearing a checkered green and blue suit.
Okay.
Of course he was. Also, he did point out that he liked the jumpsuit I was wearing, which was corduroy, and he specifically went, ooh, a corduroy jumpsuit. And I thought, first of all, a footballer noticing your fashion. Well, that says a lot, doesn't it?
That's the first time in a long time that anyone's had any praise for corduroy, I think.
I know.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much. I was slightly scared about wearing it, but if you get praise from Tony Adams, you know you're onto a winner. So, but he was sat there in his character suit and he was just, you could tell how gutted he was watching Arsenal the whole afternoon. And at the end, he just said, he has to go. Unai Emery has to go. Those were Tony Adams' words.
The point is not enough. How we play it is not enough. And I understand the supporters and the players are frustrated. But now is to analyse and to find solution for to improve. And we know here that in Emery it is the key for to improve and to connect with our supporters and to feel comfortable and to feel strong.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. Of course, if you want to get in touch with us, it's at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, at Football Ramble on Twitter. You can also email us, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com with any questions or any special offers you might have for us.
We get a lot of special offers, by the way. We the last one we had was an hour's worth of bowling. I think we should take it up.
Well, it's 35% off, wasn't it?
Oh, I thought it was free.
Oh, yeah.
I've clearly read the email wrong. Maybe if you buy a certain amount of food, you get it for free.
Clearly, we need to come to an agreement on economic policy. Yeah, but a lot of people have been in touch. So thank you so much for getting in touch with us. But we wanted to have a word about Manchester City because, weirdly, they're kind of under our correspondents' radar at the moment, aren't they? What do you think it is? Do you think people have completely written off their chances of coming back and winning the Premier League? I still think, and not just because they beat Chelsea this weekend, which I wasn't convinced they'd do before kickoff, and of course they didn't start the game particularly well. I thought Chelsea were excellent, especially in the first half. They're still kind of in the mix, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they are. I think the majority of people, if you ask them, would still say that Manchester City are very much in this title race. I don't think it's you can say it's over yet.
Is that because of them or because of like the historical precedent with Liverpool? The fact that we've not seen Liverpool close out a league since the start of the 90s?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, isn't it? And I think that when you look at it, it seems crazy to think because Liverpool are 9 points ahead of Manchester City right now. For Man City to overtake Liverpool in the league, they have to win every single game and Liverpool would have to lose at least three and drop points in a fourth game. And when you look at Liverpool right now, you just can't see that happening.
They always find a way.
They always find a way, don't they, Liverpool? And it seems as though it's one of those seasons now, doesn't it? Where every single game, even if Liverpool aren't playing well, they seem to get a win. They seem to win late. They seem to come back from behind. It just feels like Liverpool have got something in them this season that's going to take them all the way. But I still think it's too soon to say Man City are out of it.
Who was watching the Liverpool game for you on Score this weekend, and how bonkers did they go when the Firmino goal went in?
Yeah, Jermaine Genius was watching it. He went more bonkers at when the Crystal Palace goal was ruled out for that push on Lovren.
Right.
We were all so confused about it at the time because obviously when you watch that goal in real time, you don't see that happen. And obviously there was quite a long delay with VAR checking that moment, and pretty much the majority of the panel for the first sort of 5 minutes of looking at that incident all agreed that it was the wrong decision. And then having looked at it back again a little bit later on in the show, I think Paul Ince and Robbie Savage both agreed it was the right decision.
Yeah, I thought it was the right decision. I thought it was a fairly clear right decision. But don't you think that's part of the problem with our perception at the moment? The fact that if you don't see it initially, it's more difficult to convince yourself that is actually the correct intervention.
I think the most difficult thing with VAR is that at the moment, as football fans, we feel like VAR are doing everything they can to find reasons to disallow goals. And that's not what it should be there for.
Yeah.
It should be there just to kind of correct some obvious mistakes. Mm. And I think that's the disappointing thing, is that...
Like Palace scoring against Liverpool, for example.
There are far too many moments where they're just picking at the tiniest things and going, yeah, that's probably enough of a reason to rule that goal out. Let's rule that one out.
I'll tell you what, we have got no business complaining against VAR, because if VAR's an enemy of anyone, it's not an enemy of the people, it's an enemy of Raheem Sterling.
It is, isn't it?
It goes off celebrating goals and then... 10 minutes later, if I was him, I wouldn't dare celebrate a goal anymore.
It wouldn't have changed the result of the game anyway, would
it? No,
it
wouldn't.
But that moment, I was in the pub watching the game, and I was so relieved when it got chalked off, because quite a few people in my fantasy mini leagues had Sterling as captain, and I was beating all of those people at the time. So I was like, please, no, no, no. And then when it got ruled out, I was like, come on. I was absolutely delighted, because I made a shrewd move just before the deadline, took Salah out. I thought, I'm not risking it. Took Salah out, and I've had Salah in my team from the start, put Mane in, and I stuck the captain's armband on him as well. So it paid off, and that Sterling moment, that is going to be one of those moments that come the end of the season will lose and win a lot of mini leagues for people.
Really?
Yeah, big moment in FPL that was. I was relieved.
Good to know that it wasn't in vain.
But as you say, you know, that Sterling, bless him. I mean, the amount of times he's scored goals this season, they've been chalked off by VAR.
You always think of the one against Tottenham, really, don't you, in the Champions League. That's the one. But yeah, I think Manchester City did excellently not to panic when they were second best, when they were a goal down. They really showed a different side to themselves here. I mean, the boys were talking on the Ramble yesterday about how they had less possession. But to manage a game in a way that's not a very Pep Guardiola way to manage a game, I thought was very impressive. Riyad Mahrez, of course, stepping in for Bernardo Silva, who I thought would be a massive miss in this game, and eventually deciding the game with his best Arjen Robben impression. Paulo Dybala was doing the same thing for Juventus away at Atalanta. So I think it was officially Arjen Robben tribute weekend. But Mahrez could be really valuable for them going forward. I mean, clearly they've got some issues with depth in certain areas of the team. But in other areas of the team, well, it's still an embarrassment of riches. And I guess, as going back to your point, that's why I can't really rule them out.
Yeah, definitely. And defensively, they've got their issues, don't they, Manchester City? But they'll come through that. They're too good a team to let that affect them too much. And going forward, because they are so talented and so good, and they've got so much depth and so many different options that they can play with and work with in matches, they are always going to score goals. And as long as you're scoring more goals than your opponent, you're going to win matches. And I think that that's the blessing that Manchester City have, and what will keep them in this title race right to the end of the season. And also for Liverpool, they've not been playing that well, so it's remarkable that they're as far ahead as they are, really, when you break it down, because defensively Liverpool haven't been that great either. No. But yet they are where they are, and they're yet to lose a game in the Premier League, and they've only kept 2 clean sheets this season, both of them away from home. And you think of Anfield as this fortress, but yet it's not been that way this season, but yet they're still winning games and not losing at home. And if they continue to do that and they pick up form defensively, this is going to be so hard for Manchester City to catch. But you can see there being the odd slip up here or there through the season. I don't know whether Man City will catch them, but I wouldn't rule them out at all.
Now, I've kind of touched on North London already a bit, Jules, with the Unai Emery thing. But it's an interesting week for North London's clubs, 2 Premier clubs, Tottenham and Arsenal. They're both at home in the Champions League and Europa League, respectively, this week. Spurs against Olympiacos tonight. Well, they'll try and clinch qualification. I know you're going to be at that one. I'm going to be at Arsenal on Thursday, which will be a bit of an unusual occasion against Eintracht Frankfurt, because Frankfurt, famous for their enormous support, won't be bringing it, because they're not allowed to bring any fans to North London, which will clearly affect the atmosphere in some way.
Those games are always really weird when there's no
really
away
weird.
Fans. I've done 2 of those matches already this season. And it's always a strange atmosphere, because there's no one for the home fans to sort of...
feed off.
Yeah, go off against, and sort of, you know, that's kind of part of football, isn't it? Having that rivalry. And when you don't have it in the stadium, it does create a bit of an odd atmosphere. I do think it's an advantage to the home side, not having any away fans there. It's just more strange than anything, though.
One of my favourite moments, though, I agree, you do need that back and forth. It was when I was going to see Arsenal play Vitória Guimarães earlier in this competition. And there was this guy dressed up, loads of Guimarães fans from, I guess, largely from the London Portuguese community, stood outside the pub outside Highbury in Islington, and I saw a bloke dressed as an archbishop drinking a can of lager.
Was it the Cock pub?
Yeah, the famous Cock.
The famous Cock.
That's
every
the one.
Time, oh no, it's so immature, but every time I get out of the tube station, I see the famous Cock, I'm like, there it is.
I deliberately didn't say it so it wouldn't make you giggle.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
But there you go. But given that the Premier League seasons of Spurs and Arsenal have gone awry a little bit, there's maybe a bit of an opportunity for them in this. Now, perhaps the Europa League and whatever happens in it, and we do expect Arsenal to go through, the Europa League is not going to save Unai Emery, I don't think. But what about Mourinho? Because clearly they could still get top four, but it's going to be a battle. I think very much depends on Chelsea and how they maintain their form. But could the Champions League be an opportunity for Mourinho to do something? Because in recent years, it's an arena in which he's disappointed in, despite the fact that he's got this incredible history with the competition.
Well, Tottenham can qualify tonight, can't they? As long as they match Red Star's result against Bayern Munich, they can qualify as early as tonight, which, I mean, Mourinho walking into that as his first home match since he's taken over as the Spurs manager, and his first Champions League game as the Tottenham boss. I mean, that's a great position to be in for Mourinho, because it's quite a quick way to get the fans on side, isn't it? Because we all know how gutted and how upset, I would say, 98% of Tottenham fans were when Maurizio Pochettino was sacked last week. And then a few hours later, Jose Mourinho, this kind of villain of football, gets appointed as the manager. It's almost like polar opposites, isn't it? Pochettino to Mourinho. And it's going to take a bit of time, and it's going to take winning something or having success at Spurs to win a lot of these fans around. And I know he's probably already done it by getting the win in the London Derby on Saturday against West Ham.
That's a good start.
It's a good start. Qualification tonight in the Champions League, that will then get another bunch of fans on side if they manage to do that. And then that just sets him up for quite a nice start at Spurs as the new manager, and it will just continue to progress from there. And I do believe that Mourinho will win something with this Tottenham side.
Really?
I do. I think that he's just got it in him, hasn't he? He's a serial winner. And no matter what anyone says about what Mourinho is like, yes, he lost his way, particularly at Manchester United, and he seemed a very different person.
Well, he still won stuff, if you want to look at the detail.
He still won. And so you look at what Pochettino has done with Tottenham over the last 5 years, it's nothing short of amazing. He turned that club into a place where Jose Mourinho would take a job, first of all.
Because
5 years ago, Mourinho wouldn't have even looked at Tottenham as an option.
No way, you're right.
And yet now, Jose Mourinho, who is one of, regardless of what anyone says, love him or hate him, regardless of what you think of Jose Mourinho, he's one of the best managers of this modern era. And he's now at Tottenham, and he is going to be so desperate to get a win there and prove everyone wrong that's doubted him.
But you're right as well. I think that Pochettino has left him in this advantageous situation. Certainly in Europe, they're in a much better position than they were in the group last year. It is the equivalent of leaving an excellent casserole in the fridge with a nice bottle of red wine to accompany it, really, isn't it? Because all he has to do is get this win against Olympiakos, who have their strengths, but are not the greatest away from home in Europe. So it's a really good opportunity for him. And I think really what I'm interested to see, what can Mourinho do? For me, there's no doubt that they'll go through tonight. What can he do in the back end of the Champions League? Because if you look at United against Sevilla, if you look at Chelsea against Paris Saint-Germain, there are some big knockout ties in which he's been shown up, really, tactically, in the last 5 years or so. And so just as we can talk about Pep Guardiola not having won the Champions League since 2011, Mourinho has got to prove that he's relevant again in the modern Champions League context. So we can talk about Tottenham like winning something, and you know, it's nice to win trophies. So if they win an FA Cup or a League Cup, then they're nice. But really, if he can prove that he's still to prove that he's still relevant in the modern game, he's still really one of the best managers. Not he has been one of the best managers, but he is one of the best managers. Doing something significant in the back end of the Champions League with Tottenham, I think would be a real feather in his cap. And I think with that in mind, I mean, there's a big load of fuss in France at the moment about Lille are very annoyed about the way he took away Christophe Galtier's two assistants, Joao Sacramento and Nuno Santos. And Sacramento, young guy who was assistant to Marcelo Bielsa initially before they fell out, then the caretaker manager before he was assistant to Galtier. Young guy, Portuguese, very, very smart tactician. And I think Mourinho is smart enough to know that he needs something else. He needs some new ideas. He needs to start again. Because you know how these new, when a new manager comes in, they basically get all the old boys back together, don't they? You know, they get the band back together and say, right, well, this is where we're pitching up next. I think this is quite an interesting departure. Clearly, Rui Fadi is off doing something else at the moment. He's coaching in the Middle East. But I think for him to take that step of saying, okay, I need to start again, I need to have some new ideas, I need help, that makes me think that there could be something for Tottenham in this Champions League, maybe.
Wow, that's a big call, isn't it? Because Champions League's such a tough competition.
Yeah, it is.
I think that if... Can Mourinho get them to a final in this season? I just can't see it happening, Andy. I just can't, and I don't know why.
Weird things have happened.
Yeah, weird things have happened, but...
Mourinho taking charge of Tottenham in the first place.
But that is a massive call. That would be extraordinary if he got them to a final.
But what would be okay? Let's take it back to Spurs and Arsenal in Europe, Jules. What would be success for both those clubs in Europe this season?
Well, I think Arsenal need to win it, really, don't they? Arsenal need to win the Europa League. That really would be their only success, because they need to go one better than they did last year, and that would be winning it.
Yeah.
You could say similarly for Tottenham, the only thing that would better last year would be winning the Champions League.
But realistically, is that realistic?
No, I can't see Tottenham getting to the Champions League final again. And I don't know why. I just don't think that it's their year. I think that it's been the team and the departure of Maurizio Pochettino, that whole shake-up has probably rocked the team a bit. And I don't see them, you know, last year I wouldn't have predicted they got to the final. And they're in a better position, in my opinion, last year than they were this year.
But arguably, if they got to the quarters or the semis and got knocked out by like a good opponent, was that acceptable? I mean, arguably that would show Mourinho's progressed as well as them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. And I think that would be, you know, it'd still be good. It'd still be decent.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately what Tottenham fans want is to start building something with Jose Mourinho as the boss. So if they, you know, got to the late stages of the Champions League and got knocked out, but they still finished in the top four of the Premier League this season and perhaps won a domestic trophy like the FA Cup, that would be a massive... I still think that would be a huge, massive success for Spurs this season.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. That's pretty much it for this week, isn't it?
I think it is. Keep getting in touch with us, and anything you want us to answer on the show, we'd gladly do it at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, at Football Ramble on Twitter. And of course, you can email us as well with anything longer than the Twitter count, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. We're off to do some European football, and we'll see you again next week. Have a good one.
This was a Stakhanov production. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.